Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Craig, and welcome to another episode of Football Kit Memories, the football podcast that gets under the shirt. In today's episode, I am joined by freelance video editor, director, and writer, Finlay Marks. During our chat, we covered some of Finlay's excellent work in football, producing content for a number of teams and brands, as well as his time at Copper 90, where he was involved in the incredible Derby Days documentary series. Later, and as always, I asked Finlay to pick out three of his favourite football shirts and tell me a little bit more about what they mean to him. We land the 90s time machine first at Ibrox for 5 and 6 in a row, next to the World Cup USA 94, and we finish in Serie A, where for Finlay, a star-studded Sampdoria side embodies a period of calcio culture it's hard to forget. Remember, you can listen to this and other episodes of Football Kit Memories on all major audio platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please do like, follow, share, but above all, please do enjoy the podcast. Okay, so today on the podcast, I'm joined by freelance video editor, director, and writer, Finlay Marks. How are you doing, Finlay?
I'm really good, Craig. How are you doing?
Mate, very well. Thank you very much. Really excited to talk. I've been on your website. I've looked at your CV, mate, and it's impressive. There's some amazing projects I want to talk to you about today.
Yeah. Thank you.
But what I want to do kind of first and foremost is to kind of roll it back and ask you how you got started off in video production. And is that something that always interested you?
I think it was actually. I've kind of always been fascinated by, really it was cinema or just kind of anything visual. I think even since I was a kid, I can remember seeing, I must have been about 8 or maybe even younger when Jurassic Park came out, and being enthralled by that experience of going into the cinema and feeling like I was in the midst of what I was watching. Like I was weirdly aware that I was watching something unfold in front of me, and I was completely invested in it, and I just absolutely loved that. And I guess that feeling's kind of never really gone away. I ended up doing business and politics at uni and just really hated it. And I think at that point I was just like, I think I really want to try and do something creative in video if I can. And so I graduated that and then went back to college and did a TV production course at Glasgow Met, as it was then. I'm not sure what it's called now. It's had about 20 different iterations over the years. And that was kind of the start of getting into the industry, I guess it was at that point. But it's always been something that fascinated me. I think even as a kid, I think anything that was like oral or visual or whatever, I was one of those kids that wasn't, I think most kids are probably, I wasn't like an avid reader or anything. I find that stuff not boring in and of itself. It's just more the medium that it was presented in was kind of boring. It resonated so much more if it was something visual that I could connect with. And I think that's kind of led me into the work that I'm doing.
Nice, mate. Nice. So you started working at Copper 90 in 2017. How did that all come about? What were you doing before that?
Before that, so my first job, I'd originally, once I graduated in Glasgow, I'd started to try and look for work in Glasgow. And at that time, I think there's more work available now, but at that time, so this is kind of like 2009, there wasn't really much going. And at that point, definitely, and I think it still is very much so today, London was really the epicenter for the creative industries. I think if you wanted to really make a go of it, you kind of had to be in the city. So I moved down to London in 2009 and was able to get some work experience and ended up getting a job working for a charity in the southwest of the city. Ended up working in Soho for a couple of years, ended up being freelance for a couple of years after that.
Yeah.
And then I met a girl who is now my wife, Sarah. Right. And when we, just after we got engaged, I was, it was so much less stress to have a full-time job at that point. Mm-hmm. But I was like, if I'm going to go back to full-time work, it needs to be something that I'm kind of interested in. And then this opportunity came up at COP90 and I was like, this is great because this marries together, pardon the expression, but this marries together my love of filmmaking and my passion for football, which has again been something that I've just been obsessed with since I was a little kid. Yeah. So that's kind of how it all came about. Did the interviews, got the job, and yeah, that was it.
So talk to me about some of the projects you worked on there. You did some of the, like, the really big ones, right? So you edited the Berlin one, the Hamburg one, the South Coast one as well.
Oh, yeah, of Derby Days. So that was, yeah. A lot of the work that I did at COP90 is probably stuff that people would never see because I did a lot of brand work.
Right.
So COP90, people would know it for the outward facing stuff, the YouTube channel and the content that they made there. But there's only a finite amount of money that's available and that kind of stuff. So really where, as the YouTube channel grew and the company grew, it was in brand partnerships that really is where the money comes to fund these films to do bigger and better things. So my job was mostly looking after the brand side of things. So when we were pitching to clients, to brands, that's what a lot of the stuff that I did was on that side. What was nice though was that in between times I occasionally got to dip my toe into some of the editorial stuff we did.
Nice.
And as my time went on there, I was fortunate enough to be able to kind of be given more and more of that stuff to do and slightly bigger and more expansive stuff, which was really good because as an editor, like, to be able to get your teeth into that kind of stuff is really good fun. Because I think most of the stuff that COPPA did when I started certainly was slightly more digestible content, in that most of the stuff we did would be explainer videos or, you know, magazine shows or travel docs, but they would probably be not longer than 15 minutes, I'd say, or 12 minutes. I think the average length would probably be a 3 to 4 minute video. But one of the jewels of the crown at COP90 was this series that Ellie Menjam wrote and direct and presented called Derby Days, where he went around some of the biggest derby matches in the world and kind of exposed you to not just the game. That was the whole point of COP90, was it wasn't just what was on the pitch, it was more the stuff off it, which started off as a workaround because they didn't have rights to show footage and all that kind of stuff. But I'm sure we'll get into this later on, but that's, I think, one of the things that's always resonated so much for me. Like, the sport is not just what happens on the pitch. It's all the wonderful stuff and the color and the flavor and the atmosphere that happens off it. Mm-hmm. And that was something that it was great at COP90 to be able to do. We kind of turned the cameras away from the pitch and onto the fans, and that fan culture is the lifeblood of football. So, so Ellie had done a number of series of this. And by the time I joined COPPA, I think he'd just finished a kind of mini series on Spain.
Right.
Where he'd gone to 4 derbies in Spain, not the ones you would think of, like El Clasico, which he'd covered a number of years earlier, but other ones. So he did like Galicia and a couple of other different regions where there were these great derbies. And at that point, he was really starting to get a bit of a groundswell. So I think some of the episodes were like, you know, 15 minutes, 18 minutes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, he was going to go to Hamburg. And I got asked if I would be up for editing it in trying to work with Ellie to try and make it something that was a bit even more filled out and fully formed and really get her teeth into what it was. And that was great fun. So that was the first episode of Derby Days I did, was the Hamburg episode, which was great. So I think that was about half an hour, which at the time was the longest ever piece of content that Copa 90 had put out.
Right.
And it was pretty well received, I think, because football fans, it really resonated with them in that it was... one thing that Ellie's absolutely brilliant at is wanting to make sure that he does right by the people and the city of where he goes. So it's not trying to pander to stereotypes or cliches of what people think that city would be like, but he really wants to get under the skin. And I think that's probably the mark that makes Ellie most proud and made us most proud as the production team, was when we got supporters of those clubs in those cities being like, oh, you absolutely nailed what Hamburg's like, or you absolutely nailed what Berlin's like, or Argentina, or Buenos Aires, or, you know, wherever we were. So that was really good. And then the next one after that was supposed to be slightly bigger again, but it turned into this behemoth of a project and of an event, which was the Super Classico episode we did, which was on the Copa Libertadores final between Boca Juniors and River Plate, which was the last one that was ever two-legged. It was the first time they'd ever met in the final. And I'm sure most people listening, if they're fans of football, will remember what happened. But it just turned into like, it was the craziest like 3-4 week period. where I think the first match was rained off by almost like a tsunami. Yeah. Then it was played about 2 days later and that ended in a draw. And then the return leg was called off because the Boca Juniors bus was attacked en route to the River Plate Stadium. And the game was on, then it was off, then it was on, then it was off again. And then eventually it got moved to Madrid in Europe to play the deciding or the second leg of it. And yeah, so that was one of the most ridiculous and fraught editing experiences of my life. But also I think one of the most fun things to be involved with, because that felt like that was quite a, in its own little way, like it's not an enormous thing, but in its own little corner of the internet, we felt really proud of what we'd been able to make and to tell the story that we did whilst Ellie and the team were out there.
Mate, it's a fantastic piece of content. Like you say, I think it's done like over 2 million views online. I wanted to ask you kind of, obviously all of that stuff is unfolding as it goes over those kind of 3 or 4 weeks. Are you guys trying to, you know, film as much as you can and edit it afterwards, or are you kind of editing on the fly? Because I guess with something like that, you don't know what the narrative is going to be until it's all over. Is that right? Or
yeah, absolutely right. So you kind of, again, I guess that was always kind of part of Copa 90's charm, was like this kind of DIY, not quite studenty, that's kind of doing a disservice, but like this kind of run and gun punk filmmaking kind of aesthetic, which was just, you know, kind of, and there's literally shots of that in all of the Derby Days episodes. I think there's a bit where the game was called off at River Stadium and Ellie's literally running towards the FIFA president, Gianni Infantino, being like, is the game on? What's happening? And he's getting pushed away. The camera hops like chasing behind him. Like it was like literally that type of filmmaking. And I mean, Ellie's an absolute pro. Like he is meticulous to the nth degree in his preparation for these films. Like he will order everything, every book he can get his hand on. He will, you know, go back years and years in old copies of 442 magazine or When Saturday Comes or Mundial, just try and like absorb everything he can about these places. So there is a huge amount of preparation that goes into it, but like you say, you kind of just have to go with it. And the Super Classico episode was just so crazy. Like that there was for folks who haven't seen the episode, the taxi driver that Ellie just by chance got on the first day was turned out to be a Boca Juniors fan. And they kind of decided to film him. And he was quite interesting. And he was telling all these great stories. I think there's one that he I think a family member was like having a christening and he was like, well, I can't go because Boca's playing. So I need to go. And it was like that level of like, lovely little localized story that was in there. And but they kept his number. And so every time they needed to go out in the city again, they called him up and he would come and pick them and drive them around. And he turned into almost like this central character in the documentary. And not as a spoiler, but there's a bit at the end where he's basically driving Ellie and the team back to the airport in the midst of all the madness that's happening. And he gave this obviously completely off the cuff thing while he's driving about the state of what he feels modern football is and what football should be and what it shouldn't be and how, you know, there can be a dark side to the game. And it was like this incredibly profound moment that Ellie and the team caught on camera. It's not scripted. Like, you kind of just have to go with it. So yeah, there's a certain element where the narrative just kind of unfolds in front of you. And then your job as the production team is to try and sell that story as best you can, like making sure that these amazing characters, which are in football everywhere, and every club will have its own, you know, crazy characters and local heroes and legends and stuff. And it's about trying to show that off on the best possible platform.
Yeah. So like, typically how big is the team that's working on something like that at Copa?
They weren't particularly big. I think just by the nature of Super Classico, it was marginally bigger. And by marginally bigger, I mean, like, so I would be basically the main editor, and then we would give chunks of the story to other guys on the in-house team as and when they had capacity to do so. Just because the turnaround was so quick to try and get it out. I think Ellie had something like 50 or 60 interviews across the 3 and a bit weeks he was there. So that's an enormous amount of footage to go through. And we'd have to do a lot of, because of the time difference, we'd have to do a lot of like early mornings or late nights or whatever. Yeah. Generally, the team on the ground filming would probably be 3 or 4. And then back in London, where we were putting it all together, it was, again, 3 or 4 tops, but it was mostly probably 1 or 2 of us working at the same time, with others dipping in when we needed the help.
Wow, mate, this is an absolutely incredible project to be involved in. I wanted to ask you then, so you're now working freelance and you work with a number of football clubs as well as brands, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky. So with Copa, because they worked with so many brands that were affiliated with the game as well, I was really fortunate in that I've been able to work with, you know, like Nike and Adi and Puma and the FA, the England national team, various different clubs through those sponsors as well, or brands. It's like, Real Madrid and Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, Juventus, like that kind of stuff, which is is really cool. And I've been able to kind of, I guess, like, in going back to freelance again, I think once you start to get known for doing certain things, then that kind of breeds the same work happening again. Yeah. And I've got no issue with that because I love football. So I love being involved with different things. So yeah, I've been really lucky. I've been doing some pieces with Chelsea, Motherwell. I know Laura Brannan, who's kind of like the head of all the content stuff over there. Mm-hmm. The two of us work together at Copa 90, so we know each other from there. So I've done some bits and pieces with them. I got to do what was really fun, the promo for the Fantasy Football Scotland app at the start of the season, which was good fun. And then I mean, this wasn't actually technically work, but one of my really good friends from my time at uni is Andy Ling, who some folks might know as Alba Mater. I think you've interviewed him on the show before as well. Mm-hmm. And we got to do this video with the Scotland national team just before the Euros. So yeah, I feel incredibly fortunate in my job to be doing something that I love generally around a subject that I love as well, which is really cool. It's not all like that, you know. There's a lot of fairly dry bits and pieces with clients and things, but they're stuff that pays the bill. And yeah, so it's nice though to be able to say that the majority of your work is stuff that you're actually interested in as well.
Yeah, it sounds super varied, the stuff you do. I wondered, you mentioned some like huge clubs there, like Spurs, Chelsea, and I wondered if there is a difference between working for clubs like that, the amount of kind of sign off you have to go through versus working for a club like Motherwell in the Scottish Premier League. Is it easier? Is it different? You know, that kind of stuff.
I think you'd actually be surprised at how small a lot of the teams are, even at these big clubs.
Really?
I think, I mean, the team at Motherwell is only literally a handful, like two or three people that will kind of be looking after all that stuff. And for that, like their content is unbelievably
They do
good.
great stuff, don't they?
It's
Fantastic.
really good. It's amazing. And but then, I think by virtue of that, like the teams at Spurs or whatever are bigger, and they have the capacity then to do slightly more work. But they're not exponentially bigger, and it's not the actual sign-off processes are very similar. So you'd be working generally, you know, with one producer or two producers, and they kind of make calls that way. I think because a lot of the turnarounds are fairly quick, because things are on an ad hoc basis, you know, like a game on a Saturday, a certain player does really well. It's like, well, let's pull out a kind of best of their clips or something like that. So the turnaround stuff's usually fairly quick. So there's not really the time for people to be precious and be like, oh, we can't have that. We can't do this. So, and I, again, I think it's probably one of those things where being a football fan helps, because you kind of, even if you weren't, didn't have an intimate knowledge of a specific club or whatever, you kind of still know who the big players at a club would be, or you know, a certain player not to feature or whatever. So, you know, like in doing edits for Spurs, you probably would never put Sol Campbell in anything, even if it was like an old highlights game or something. It's small things like that.
Saves you time on sign off, knowing your football a little bit, basically.
Yeah, I think so.
Great. So look, Finley, you've worked across some amazing projects already, but is there a project that would be your dream project? Is there something you could retire on?
Do you know, I don't think I've ever been asked that question before. I don't know. I think I've been lucky enough that as a football fan, the team that I supported as a kid was Rangers. As most people kind of my age and younger tend to do, they've got either a soft spot or actively support an English team as well. So from the age of about 11, when I saw them at a pre-season tournament at Ibrox, Spurs had kind of been my second team. And then obviously being Scottish, Scotland is my national team. And I think I've been able to tick off working with Tottenham and the Scotland national team. So I guess for me, like if the opportunity came up to do something with Rangers, that would be really cool. But we'll wait and see if that happens. Again, maybe there's that thing of, you know, never work with your heroes kind of thing. But I mean, maybe that's the kind of the only other thing where I'd be like, if I think if I could say that I've done something for Rangers, then that would be pretty cool. I think 8-year-old me would be pretty satisfied with that.
Very nice, mate. Well, let's hopefully it happens for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Should we talk about some football shirts?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, mate, the question I ask everybody on the podcast is, what do football shirts mean to you?
So I was thinking about this question, and there's no real way of saying this without coming across like a total, like, up his own arse hipster. But I kind of feel like for me, the thing that draws out most emotion is are like the what are now called retro kits. Like, I firmly believe the 80s to a lesser extent, but definitely the 90s was like the golden period for football kits. And I kind of feel like I always loved them. So I feel like, you know, the retro kit thing has definitely become a really cool thing over the last 5, 6, 7 years or whatever. But I liked it before it was cool. I've always been fascinated by like the colors and the ranges and the sizes and like how bizarre some of them were, but just how iconic a lot of them are as well. And you even see that now, like, you know, the retro kit cultures is huge now. And people who were probably not even born when the kits came out will now wear it as a fashion item or whatever. Like, that's a total look in and of itself. Yeah. And there's the market now where not even, you know, the original shirts, but like en masse replica shirts are doing brilliantly. You know, you see the Euros, how many of the Scotland Euro 96 tops did you see, or the France 98 tops, and rather as much as the brand new top, like the one that the team's playing in currently. And I think I get nostalgic about it because I think, to me, those kits, like the 90s kits or football in general in the 90s, is representative, I feel, of a much more innocent time in the sport. I think, like, before, really in the 2000s and beyond, it turned into, I feel, a much more kind of corporate marketing behemoth than it was back then. You know, like in the 90s, you would have clubs would wear the same kit for 2 seasons in a row. That's just absolutely bonkers to think of now. And I, again, like, so I'm a Rangers fan. The club has just very recently released its 4th kit of the season, which kind of makes sense. And it's a big anniversary year for the club, but still, it's just, and also it's like shelling out £60 every time, you know. And then there's like the pro version, or there's the long sleeve version. And like, when we were growing up, it was just the kit. Like, that was it. You didn't even get names on the back of your shirt. It was just maybe a number if you were a bit flash, but, you know, you didn't get names on your shirt. So I remember thinking about this. Would it have been the 2006 World Cup that you look at the, I think it was all the night kits. It was basically the same carbon copy design with the colors changed depending on what country it was. And I just find that just really dull and boring. I was like, it essentially just looks like a training kit. Yeah. And I think, to me, most modern football kits kind of look like training gear with a badge or something on it. You do get occasional ones that are a bit more interesting. So I think like the Nigeria kit during the 2018 World Cup again, for probably on a fashion side of things, has become like an iconic shirt. But I maybe part of it is that thing that because teams don't wear their kits as often or over these longer cycles, they have less chance to become iconic, because the way kits become iconic are the players that play in them or the trophies that your club won wearing them or whatever it is. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about them. I'm definitely happily a kind of like old man about this stuff. I firmly believe that the football kits from the 90s were like a golden period.
Well, look, mate, let's take a step back into the 90s then with your first shirt. So this is, I'll be honest with you, a very dark time for me. This is Rangers 92 to 94 home shirt by Adidas. I think it's the fifth and sixth league titles in a row, this one.
It was, yeah. So this was the first football shirt I ever owned. It was the football shirt that Rangers were wearing when I would say properly started following the team and, you know, like looking out for the results and everything. And it's just, I still think it's the best looking football shirt. And a lot of that's to do with the memories that are attached to it. But like the sponsor and the crest being in the middle, like that huge big red Adidas collar that was on it, the big Adidas flashes down the side, the three stripes. But like you say, I think it's for the memories that are associated with it. So the first season that Rangers wore it was 92-93, where Rangers won the treble and came very close to getting into the final of the first ever Champions League, just when it was eight teams. And also as well, the other thing, the away kit, and I think this is something that I find sad doesn't happen anymore, but I love when an away kit is the inverted pattern of a home kit. I just love when that happens. And the away kit that season was a white shirt with the red collar and blue Adidas stripes down the side. So I absolutely love that kit. I was my grandparents. I didn't actually grow up in that much of a football supporting family. It was my granddad, really. He's the football fan in the family, and he's a Dundee fan. But I think his father was a Rangers fan, so he kind of didn't mind that I had chosen Rangers. And it's like, it's weird how when you're like, I think I must have been five or six at this point, the really important things to you are how cool the players look and what colour they play in. Yep. And I was like, I loved the blue kit and I loved Ali McCoist. And that was basically the reason that I wanted to support Rangers. I wanted to score goals like Ali McCoist. So, yeah.
Mate, they're good enough reasons. I think you're right. Absolutely beautiful shirt, isn't it? I think France had a similar one, didn't they? Similar template as well.
There were quite a few Adidas kits that had very similar ones. I think Liverpool round about the same time, kind of 91 to 93, with the candy on the front, had, it wasn't three big stripes down the side, but it was like three off the shoulder and three off the stomach kind of thing.
Scenario. Yeah.
Yeah. And France definitely had a similar kit to that, which was, I think it was like one or two red and one white. Thing coming down. It's like a Cantona kit, I think, one, probably early 90s. But yeah, it's just a cool looking kit.
Absolutely beautiful, mate. So look, let's move on to your second shirt. This is another cracker. I like this one. So this is the USA away shirt by Adidas at USA 94. Tell me more, mate.
So the reason I picked this was more for the tournament, because I think everybody kind of remembers their first World Cup or their first Euros, whatever the first major tournament is. And a lot of people look back on USA 94 as not a great tournament. You know, it was the first ever final decided on penalties. I was absolutely transfixed with it the whole time. I think part of it was to do with, this is a really boring technical aside as an editor, but in trying to explain what I mean by the look of the footage, because the frame rate of American TV is different from what we have in Europe and in the UK. So we use 25 frames a second. In America, it's 24 or 29.99 or 30 or 60, or there's like variations. Like some frame rates are just absolutely bizarre. But When you move that back onto a broadcast that is 25 frames per second, it has this kind of like fuzzy, glossy quality to it, which is why American TV, you can tell it's American TV, especially the old stuff, by looking at it. You wouldn't even have to hear the audio for it to know that. It's different now because everything's digital, so it doesn't really matter, and TV's all kind of broadcast the same, so it all looks the same now. But back in the 90s and before, you could tell that when it was an American broadcast. And I think because of that, it kind of, all the football had this like really weird, ethereal, not quite real, glossy aesthetic. And I thought that was so cool. And because it was in America, it was like the colors were brash and bold, and none of the stadium announcers pronounced the players' names right or anything. You know, I just, even small things like that sounded epic. So like you had I don't know why this one sticks out in my mind, but at the tournament, one of the strikers for Sweden was a player called Martin Dahlin, who I think played at Blackburn Rovers for a while and stuff. But I remember he scored for Sweden in one game, and the announcer came on and he was like, "Scorer for Sweden, Martin Dahlin." And that sounded so epic and different. And I think as well, because it was because of the time difference, I was watching it in the evening, but it was like daylight over there, and the stadiums were enormous and the crowds were going crazy, and just, I absolutely loved it. Yeah. Anyway, getting back to the kit, I think just because, I mean, I could have picked any number of the kits from this tournament. Like, there's some absolute bangers. Like, the Morocco kit is amazing. The Nigeria kit was amazing. Even the Italy shirt, it was blue, but it had like an embossed kind of logo of the national association on it. And the Brazil kit was great because it had, again, like that huge embossed
shield badge thing.
And that was an Umbro kit, that was really cool. I remember the Republic of Ireland kit was really cool, the away one. It was like white but with like green faded lines going down the front. It was just great, and there were so many great iconic moments in that as well. You know, John Aldridge shouting at the technical guy in the pink jacket, and Diana Ross missing in the opening ceremony. The Germany kit as well was amazing, with the kind of like diamonds going down the way, and the Mexico kit was great. Basically, every kit was great, but for some reason, the USA away kit stuck in my mind. So it's like the blue one with these stars going down the side of it, I guess I kind of just chose them out of the nostalgic reason that surrounded the whole tournament, not just the team. I think everybody can probably see in their mind, in that American kit, Alexi Lalas with his crazy red hair and the big goatee beards coming down. But it was just, to me, it signifies like that tournament was just so fun and so cool. And just what I was alluding to earlier, like this time where it seemed a lot more innocent, I don't know, just a lot more fun. That's the kind of kit, the one kit that really summed up for me that whole experience of what that World Cup was like.
Love it, mate. Love it. I think we're a similar age, so I'm kind of getting the same kind of memories from this stuff too, mate. Fantastic. So we've got final kit in the 90s. So this is the Sampdoria 94-95 home shirt by Asics. How come you chosen this one?
So this one, I think, again, like if you've grown up in the 90s, I think it's fair to say that most people would have really good memories of Saturday morning Gazzetta Football Italia, and like how important watching that different type of football on TV was as a football fan growing up. Yeah. I think Football Italia, to me, I get, this is going back to something of why I loved working at Coppa 90, because it wasn't just about the football. I mean, the football was mind-blowing. It was amazing. Pretty much every week there was an overhead kick being scored, or a 35-yard thunder bastard by a central defender that's never scored in their career before. It was the place to be. Like, the Italian league had all the best players and like crazy goals and amazing kits and all the rest of it. But in watching Gazzetta, you know, like you saw these bits where like their newspaper was pink. Like, how cool was that? And you had James Richardson sitting on some massive big stoned piazza somewhere with a pudding the size of his head in front of him. you know, spouting off like in Italian what the headline was and why that was crazy and, you know, why the Perugia manager had only lasted 9 days and all of these kind of, and you're like, I don't need to know any of this, but it's cool. And yeah. I think for me, it kind of, it touched on something which was, I think has become something as an adult I've really enjoyed embracing, which is kind of the travel and the wanderlust element of football culture and being like enjoying and being inquisitive about other people's culture and traveling around. And one of my favorite things to do is, sadly I haven't had much cause to do it over the last 2 years with the pandemic, but visiting different countries and trying to visit a football match while I'm there. So yeah. I've been to like Ferencváros in Budapest or Hertha Berlin in Germany, or just before the pandemic struck, a couple of friends and I went out to the El Gran Derby, so the Seville Derby between Betis and Sevilla. And it's wonderful to not just go for the football, which is brilliant, but like soak up the atmosphere, try the food, listen to the music, go on a night out there. Like when we were in Seville, we went to like a late night flamenco bar and just all these different things. I love that the way that football can be a thing that opens doors to the rest of the world, to different people. Yeah. I think I have a fairly decent grasp of geography, particularly European geography, and I think 90% of that is down to knowing where random football teams are from qualifiers or whatever. Like I would have no reason to know where Tbilisi is other than I know Dinamo Tbilisi, where Timuri Ketsbai used to play or something like that, you know, like this weird little peccadillos that you get from being a football fan that you get. And I think Serie A was the thing that kicked that off for me mid-90s watching it. And again, like there were so many cool kits at this time, so many cool teams, so many cool players. But I've always had a bit of a soft spot for the Sampdoria kit and Sampdoria as a team. Yeah. I think because they came close to being spectacular in the 90s. But they never quite got there, and they faded away a little bit since then. And there's like a kind of that romance that drags you in as a football fan, as a neutral, to something where you're just like, oh, you kind of want the underdog to do it. And at this time, I think this particular kit is beautiful because it's the one with the kind of lace up 1920s style bit at the front. With the thread at the front, the collar, which you would see on, you know, I think Man United had a kit in the 90s that was similar as well. Yeah. They've got the iconic ERG sponsor and also the badge and the colours going across the stomach, not across the traditional bits above the top of the breast. And they've got like the little Italian kind of flag, the mod symbol that's in the corner. And I think it was just the players that were associated with them at that time. Again, like not necessarily always the best players, although they had some truly world-class talents, you know, like Ruud Gullit and Gianluca Vialli and Mancini and a couple of other players like that, Veron. But they had like Sinisa Mihailovic, who was just an absolute nut job, who could smash in a free kick like nobody's business. And they had, just kind of cool players as well as great players. And to me, that it's just one of the most fun kits. I think the badge as well of the kind of, it's not really on this kit, but just the Samp logo of like a, it's almost like Peter Pan crossed with Popeye. It's like a guy kind of with a little
I can't remember his
pipe
name
coming out.
I can't remember his name. They have a special name for him, don't they?
I don't know actually. That's terrible. I don't know that, but it's I just always thought they were kind of a cool club. I think again, probably part of that, I saw Sampdoria at Ibrox in the same preseason tournament. I saw Tottenham when I was about 10 or 11.
Aye.
And I guess maybe like that affiliation then kind of sticks a little bit as well. But that was why I chose that one, because I just I think it's symbolic of that, how cool that Italian football was in the 90s, and I think how much of an example that was to probably the Premier League and La Liga and other leagues going forward was just like, if you were able to attract the best talent, like that became the focus. At the time, Italy was just, you know, amazing to watch.
Right. I love it. No, Finley, thanks so much for sharing your football kit memories with me. That's three absolutely amazing choices, mate. where can people find you online?
Probably Twitter's the easiest place. I think I've got a really weird spelling of my name that's got a D in it. So if you search that, it'll probably bring up everything, Twitter, Instagram, my website and everything. But it's, at Finley Marks on Twitter. I think it's at Finley_Marks on Instagram. And just finleymarks.com is the website if you want to see any of the work I've done or other things.
Lovely stuff, mate. Been absolutely fantastic speaking to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
No, thanks so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Always fun to talk about football like this.
So there you have it. Massive thanks to Finley for sharing his football kit memories with me. Remember, you can follow me, my own collection, on Instagram, or get in touch via Twitter or email. Make sure you follow Finley too, check out his socials, and check out his website for more of his work. The music you heard on the podcast was produced by Evil Ed. Check out his music on his Bandcamp page. There's links to absolutely everything I mentioned there in the notes section. And finally, thanks to you for listening. If you have enjoyed it, please do spread the word, give me a follow on social, and subscribe to Football Kit Memories on your podcast player of choice. And other than that, I'll catch you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.